Sun's Weekend All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the March 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off in Ghana, where Yao Afusu-Larbi recently returned from a reporting trip to the country's northern region. Yao was able to catch up with a few Ghanaian footballers who are now retired, but who represented their country proudly at both the youth and senior levels. One of them is Mohamed Gago, a defender during his playing days who won a gold medal with the Ghanaian team at the 1991 FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Italy, a bronze medal the following year at the 1992 Olympics in Spain, and a silver medal at the 1993 FIFA Under-20 World Cup in Australia. Yao says Mohamed Gago has been coaching for more than a decade since putting away his playing boots. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. It is a sunny Thursday morning in Tamale, and players of Steadfast Football Club are going through their morning workout session, jogging, kicking, and doing a lot more drills. Overlooking them is their coach, former Black Star Mohamed Gago.
Come back, come back, come back. We are coming and going again. We are coming and going, so let's get used to that.
Gago was the ultimate youth football star. In 1991, he was a member of the Black Star-led side that won the Under-17 World Cup and made headlines the world over. His stellar work out there gave him a chance to feature in the Metiers team that played at the Olympics the following year. The Barcelona Games was a huge success for Ghana. It delivered the country's and Africa's first medal in football. All of this in addition to the 20 times he played for the Black Stars. But as he sat down to take stock of how incredible his playing career was for Ghana...
It was good. I mean, we've had a fantastic outbreak as far as football is concerned. We're able to be successful in 91, and then I would say 92, Barcelona, the Olympics as well, because we came home with the first African medal. A lot of good memories. I mean, the 1991 squads, we used to have a lot of, an abundance of talents in the likes of Alex Opoku, Dan Ado, Emmanuel Dia, Jose Okafor, Odate Lante, Yaprekou, and others. I mean, it's a different generation all together. I mean, I will classify my time as the best national under-17 ever that Ghana has ever brought up.
Gago's career shot up quickly. Spotted with a plaster right above his nose, he was one of the first Ghanaians to play in the Italian league and landed in Torino in 1992. He went on to play 119 times for Udinese, where he oversaw the growth of former Black Stars captain Steven Appiah. Gago's growth and status in the Italian league demystified perceptions about African players. For him, he influenced the influx of African players in the league.
Comparatively to the Italian league, a lot of Ghanaians seem to thrive in the Italian league. What is the reason behind that?
I would say I was the reason, because I was one of the first players actually from the West African or South Saharan Africa to establish fully or to start a football career in Italy. I mean, we had to go a lot during that time. We have to deal with racism, and we have to deal with the fact that we were young, inexperienced, and we were brought into a very big league like the Serie A. The world couldn't understand, even the Italians couldn't understand. It makes me happy, especially with Steven Appiah, who has never forgotten how he got himself into Serie A, because I played my part as a senior brother and as someone who was there to make sure that he never came back to Africa.
Being a pace setter meant he became financially sufficient at an early stage in his life. He could afford the best houses and drove fast cars, a lifestyle many of his colleagues could only dream of. He lived a very fast life, and that has its limitations and regrets. Gago says he regrets being naughty.
It's been too much naughty, and not paying so much attention, and thinking they have so much time. You know, in football, you have your prime times that takes you up to about from 10 to 15 years. That's what I don't want these guys to waste, you know. Sometimes they think they are young and they have time. Meanwhile, this is the right time. Now that football has become so much a lucrative business, so the earlier you get into the top level, the better it is for you.
Naughty or not, there's one thing we cannot take away from Gago. He was an incredibly good footballer, and the players he coaches these days will only hope they can get that far. From Tamale, in the northern region of Ghana, Yao Fusilabi for the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thanks, Yao. Some of Africa's top young footballers will be in action this weekend in Mauritania and next week in neighboring Morocco. Ghana will go against Uganda Saturday in the final of the Africa Under 20 Cup of Nations tournament in Mauritania. And then on March 13th, the Africa Under 17 Cup of Nations kicks off in Morocco. Emmanuel Amunike is Nigeria's 1994 African Footballer of the Year and the former head coach of Tanzania's national team. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Amunike said he received a special invitation from the Confederation of African Football to closely monitor the boys' tournament in Morocco.
I was invited by CAF to be part of the AFCON Under 17 that is going to take place in Morocco this year, and a member of the TSG, which is a technical study group. They are responsible of getting data and information about the tournament and about the players and about the statistics of the team. So for me, it's a very big privilege. I have been with CAF in the Under 20 in Niger and also in the Under 17 in Tanzania, the last editions of Under 20 and Under 17. So I think it's a very big privilege. And I'm really grateful and I thank them for looking to my dash to serve them.
World Football Governing Body, FIFA, has cancelled the Under 17 and Under 20 World Cup tournaments. What should be done to harness the potentials and talents discovered in the African Youth Championships?
Unfortunately, the Under 17 and Under 20 at FIFA level has been cancelled due to the pandemic that since last year has affected all the continent. But the good thing is that we must commend CAF for their ability to continue with their own tournament. And I think this is the right direction that CAF took in terms of the development of these players, terms of the capacity of the players to have the privilege to be able to represent their country and also have the privilege to develop their game. I think it was a very good one, and we must commend CAF for this. The important thing at this category is not all about just winning. I think it is important that these players can be able to continue with their formation on their football, because football also has its own information. It's the same thing like going to school, and the moment you're not able to continue your study in one stage, it will really affect your ability to progress in your educational aspect. And I think this is the same thing that goes to football. We all are aware that African teams mostly depend on this competition to be able to exhibit their players, to be able to use it to develop their players. And I think what CAF did was a very good one. It will help the players. It will help the organization also to be in a position to evaluate what they have done and what need to be added more and what need to be brought on board, continue to see the development and improvement of our games in Africa. So I think it's a good one from CAF, and I hope the tournament in Morocco will be a very big success for these young lads that are, you know, nodding the ambition to have the possibility to play a professional football, to be spotted by clubs, and I hope it will be a very good one. But there won't be any doubt that the standard of the organization that CAF has put on ground will help and make the tournament to excel. Now in Africa, I think the tournament itself, we afford the countries and we afford the players the opportunity to excel, like I have said earlier. And also, I think it's an opportunity for we to use the platform in Africa to look at the players that are promising, to look at the players that we can keep as a team, like what the Europeans are doing. I think the important thing is to make sure that you have at least 15 to 20 bulk of players. With this, that will enable you to be monitoring the players. For example, the under 17, if a country after the tournament can have a bulk of players of 15 to 20 players, and with the same bulk of players can have the capacity to progress to under 20, from the under 20, maybe under 23, and then that we afford the possibility of these players and being in the senior national team, in the absolute national team, and then representing their country. And that we also give them the opportunity to have the capacity of competing. Since they have known each other, the work will be much easier for whomever is going to coach them. I think these are the methods that the Europeans are using. It's not all about just winning the tournament. It's about important of, you know, discovering some players that you can harness, some players that you can keep, some players you can develop to make it to the top stage, be in a position to be able to compete. I think this is the objective of this category, and I hope this tournament in Morocco will afford all the countries that are going to participate the opportunity for their players to rise to the above and for their players to do the best, and for them to also use it to discover their players, and then those players moving from this under 17 and becoming great stars in the future.
Can you tell Sunnyside of Sports listeners, if you've been monitoring players you coached at under 17 and under 20 national teams for Nigeria, what's your assessment of these players?
Well, I've been following the players that I coached at the under 17, and I'm happy that some of them are doing very well in their various club, I mean, and some of them also are trying to find their way. As we all are aware, you know, football, an adaptation is totally different when it comes to football. Some players adapt so quick and some adapt gradually. So, but the important thing is that we hope and pray that these players, not only the ones that came through me, there are other players also before them. And if we Nigerians want to do something meaningful when it comes to the game, I think we must have our players playing at the top level, being in a position to compete, and that will afford us the capacity and that will give them the possibility to be in a stage to compete on African level and also on the international scene. So I've been following them and I wish them all the best, and I pray they continue to do their best, and then at the end they can become relevant to the national team and become a pride to African football.
That's Emmanuel Amunike, Nigeria's 1994 African Footballer of the Year and the former head coach of Tanzania's national team. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Santander, Spain.
Sporty greetings. This is Emmanuel Amunike, former Nigerian player, former Tanzanian coach. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Many thanks. Remain blessed and stay safe. God bless you.
Samson Omale joins us once again with another spicy package of African sports news. Sporty Friday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you, Sunny. We begin in Las Vegas, where Nigerian-born mixed martial artist Israel Adesanya will attempt to be just the fifth person to be a two-weight UFC world champion. Israel Adesanya, who is the middleweight champion, is stepping up to try and take the UFC's light heavyweight crown from Polish fighter Jean Bakalowicz. Adesanya, who is known as the last style bender, faces a tough task in his attempt to cement his legacy in his quest to become a double-weight champion, one in the middleweight and secondly in the light heavyweight, when he faces the current UFC light heavyweight champion this weekend.
For me, this is exactly what I've always predicted to do in this game is change the game, change history. And I came in here just over 3 years ago, and look what I've done so far. And I got a long way to go.
A win for Adesanya, who has a perfect record of 20 wins and no losses with 15 knockouts, will see him join the elite list of fighters who have held two belts in different weight classes at the same time.
But yeah, middleweight's my division, so I ruled that with an iron black fist. So yeah, I'm gonna go back down and handle business there, depending on the lay of the land. But also, I look ahead and see. I peek ahead. I don't look too far ahead because I've got this Viking in front of me. So, yeah, I'm looking straight at him. But, yeah, I peek ahead and just see what the lay of the land is and how I can change history again.
Adesanya's opponent, Jan Błachowicz, has seen a late career resurgence, which saw him capture the UFC light heavyweight crown in his last fight back in September. Jan Błachowicz, in his pre-match press conference, said he plans to knock out Adesanya and defend his title.
You know, I'm just happy that I can, defend my belt against someone like Israel. So that's it, you know, I'm happy, excited. I cannot wait, you know, to step inside the octagon and start, you know, fighting against him. I try to knock him out and, you know, defend myself the best I can. I try to use my, you know, all power, my weight to wrestling, to take him down, or, you know, just knock him out. We'll see, you know. But, you know, he is really good striker, so I have to be, you know, watch for everything, because also he can knock me out.
For American boxing trainer and fight commentator Teddy Atlas, he says Adesanya appears to be a determined fighter who believes in himself and destiny.
I think Adesanya, there's something different about this guy athletically, mentally. I believe he believes he has a destiny to be special, to be great. Kind of like a Tiger Woods had a destiny. There's different people that have that feeling of destiny attached to them. I think he's one of them that does feel that, does believe that, does act like that. He's a guy that you don't know what you're going to get when you're watching him. You don't know what's new and fantastic might happen right in front of your eyes, really.
In cricket news, Temba Bavuma made history on Thursday after being named as the first black African captain of a South African cricket side after being appointed their limited overs keeper. The 30-year-old batsman will lead the Proteas, the South African national cricket team, in the next two 2020 World Cups later this year and in 2022 and the next 50-over World Cup in 2023. Bavuma has been part of South Africa's test team since 2014-2015 season but has only been a regular member of the limited overs teams since the 2019-2020 season. But while his test batting average is a modest 32.26, he has shown a top order batsman in both white ball formats. Bavuma became the first black African to score a test century for South Africa against England in Cape Town in 2016.
I understand the deeply rooted significance of it all in being the first black African captain to lead our country. I guess, you know, you don't have to look too far all the way, looking at our history, looking at our political situation within the country. And I can completely understand why people in our country would celebrate it for what it is. So, I mean, I'd be lying if I said it didn't mean to me. I'd be lying if I said that it does not make me think of where everything started for me and how I've been able to go through that journey and get to this point where I am.
He acknowledged that apart from being a captain, he wants to create a legacy as a batsman.
I still stick to my sentiments in the sense that from a pure ambition point of view, as much as I am the first black African captain, from a playing point of view, I think I still have strong ambitions that I'd like to achieve. And combined with being known as the first black African captain, I'd also like to be known as someone who led the team very well and created a legacy for himself.
In basketball news, Nigeria's national female basketball team, the Tigress, recently concluded a 10-day camping exercise in Atlanta, USA, in line with the Nigerian Basketball Federation decision to start early preparation for the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. Currently ranked first in Africa and 14th in the world, the Tigress is the only African team that will be competing in the basketball event. To ensure they compete with minimal distractions, the Tigress point guard, Promise Amukamara, has restated the importance of funding for the team in their quest to compete favorably against some of the best in the world during the Tokyo Olympics.
So my expectation for the federation and the government is for them to just provide us with the right funding so that we can prepare well for the Olympics. I know on our schedule we have a lot of preparation games before the Olympics, and I think all those preparation games are going to be beneficial for us to do well in the Olympics, because I think we have a great team, a great coaching staff to do well in the Olympics, but some of that requires funding. So I think if we get that, everything will be good, and you know, the sky is the limit for us.
And on to football. The finals of the 23rd edition of the Under-20 African Cup of Nations will take place this Saturday, with first-timers Uganda locking horns with three-time winners Ghana in the Mauritanian capital of Nouakchott. Former champions Ghana beat the Gambia by a solitary goal in the first semi-final at the Stade Olympique in the capital Nouakchott on Monday. The game was a rematch of the final Group C match between the two sides earlier in the tournament, which the Gambia won 2-1. The second semi-final proved to be a more entertaining affair as debutant Uganda thumped Tunisia 4-1 at the same venue. Uganda Hippos striker Richard Basangwa, who scored the goal and had an assist in the semi-final match against Tunisia, says the Hippos intend to continue playing their fearless brand of free-flowing football when they take on the Black Satellites.
I was able to score a goal and make an assist, which gave me confidence, but it doesn't make me rest. I'm working very hard for the final game Saturday, so that we can win the trophy. As a team, we're really prepared. We're working very hard. We don't have any injuries. The team is physically, mentally, and spiritually fit, which shows us that we are capable of winning the trophy Saturday.
Black Satellites of Ghana coach Abdul Karim Zito says, having qualified for the finals, his eyes is on the ultimate prize.
Seriously, this is a different platform, unlike the group stage. This, when you are able to qualify, it means you are going for the ultimate. And then the two objectives of why we left Ghana to this AFCON is, one, to qualify for the World Cup, even though there's some clause against that. So I've qualified for the World Cup. Indeed, whether it will come on or not, only Allah knows. Then, two, now I'm preparing myself for the ultimate. And the ultimate is to win the cup for my country. You understand me? So definitely the attitude in this game will never be like the attitude we play during the group stage.
In Uganda, Johnny McKinstry has been suspended as Ugandan Cranes coach less than 2 years after taking the job from Frenchman Sebastien Desabre. In a short statement, FUFA asked the Northern Irishman to step aside just a few weeks before the national team resumed their African Cup of Nations qualifiers with a home tie against Group B leaders Burkina Faso. Assistant coach Mubiru Abdullah, Mbambazi Livingston, and goalkeeping coach Kajoba Fred will take charge of the team during this period. The rest of the technical team remains unchanged. Ahmed Hussein is a director of communication for the Federation of Uganda Football Association.
At the moment, we are looking at activities for the next 1 month. So with Mr. McKinstry aside and his assistants taking charge, I'm sure they also want to deliver.
And now to the Champions League. Record 9-time CAF Champions League winners Al Ahly of Egypt will face unexpectedly early pressure in the 2020-2021 campaign when they host V Club from the Democratic Republic of Congo this weekend. An away loss to surprise Group A pay setters Simba of Tanzania has left the Cairo Red Devils third in the standings, 2 rounds into the mini-league phase of the premier African club competition, the CAF Champions League. Simba are away to El Merrikh of Sudan. In Group B, Wydad Casablanca will be at home to second place Horoya of Guinea, while strugglers Kaizer Chiefs of South Africa and Petro Atletico of Angola will battle in Soweto, seeking maximum points to remain in the hunt for qualification. In Group C, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa will be guest of 5-time champions TP Mazembe in DR Congo, while CR Blue Sadad and Al Hilal of Omdurman will be hoping to register their win of the 2020-2021 CAF Champions League group stage campaign when they meet at the Stade du Faro Julien 1962 in Algiers. Group D will witness the biggest fixture this weekend when Osporans of Tunisia will trade tackle with Zamalek of Egypt. Both teams have won the Champions League 9 times between them. In the other Group D game, Moluda Olja of Algeria will face debutant Duregoth of Senegal. And finally, in women's football news, South Africa Football Association President Danny Jordan has urged Africa to explore co-hosting to stand any chance of hosting the future World Cup and to look seriously at the opportunity of hosting a Women's World Cup. Following the success of the 2019 tournament, FIFA expanded the Women's World Cup to 32 teams, and last year, Australia and New Zealand were awarded the hosting rights for the 2023 finals. South Africa intended to bid for the 2023 tournament, but withdrew at an early stage. South Africa qualified for the first Women's World Cup in 2019, and SAFA President Danny Jordan believes an African women's team will win the World Cup before their male counterparts.
The first African team to win the World Cup would be a woman national team. If you can see the ranking and you see the performance, and I will not be surprised. Don't ask me when Bafana is going to win the World Cup, but we will win the Women's World Cup with Banyana long before Bafana makes it into a final.
It's back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale with that spicy African sports package. Parkinson's disease affects millions of people around the world, but VOA's Gwen Uten tells us about one grandmother who has stepped inside the ring to fight back symptoms of the disease. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Sports fans, allow me to introduce you to Nancy Vanderstraeten, a 75-year-old Belgian grandmother who is throwing punches in the fight against Parkinson's disease.
Hello, I'm Nancy. I'm boxing here against my Parkinson's disease. I'm now 9 years declared Parkinson. 6 years I really use much medicines. And I discovered that's not enough. You have to move. And box is the ideal to move.
And move she does at a gym on the Mediterranean coast of southwest Turkey, where she now lives and trains. And she tells Reuters News she silenced the skeptics who once said she's too old to step inside the ring.
If you are more than 50 years old, they really look at you like this. What are you coming to do here? But they are gentle from heart, the Turks, so they let me do. And in the boxing ring, here they accept me completely. I'm here for 3 years now. But when I say I'm making drawings, people are not really interested. When you say I'm a boxer, the reaction is immediately.
Vanderstraeten first strapped on boxing gloves 6 years after she was diagnosed with Parkinson's, a progressive nervous system disorder that affects movement. Those who suffer from it experience tremors and stiffness, as well as problems with walking and speaking. Studies have shown non-contact boxing improves some symptoms of the disease, like fatigue, anxiety, and balance, without the risk of head trauma. And Vanderstraeten says she has discovered for herself the benefits of the sport.
It does not stop you, Parkinson. Parkinson is a degenerative disease. It never stops. But you can keep slow it down. And it's like a break. And instead of being miserable do all week, you stand up and you say, oh, today, boxing. Stand up, get ready, go to box. And after the boxing, after two hours training, you feel really better.
And neurologist Gesu Karlakaya says while the sport may not cure Parkinson's disease, she agrees non-contact boxing is great exercise for patients.
You move the legs, you have to make quick decisions, and all of these keep your brain active. And studies have shown that non-contact boxing is good for the brain, so it's of course good for Parkinson's disease. Will it cure Parkinson's disease? Probably not, because it's a neurodegenerative disorder, which means we don't know the cause. We don't have any treatment, and it's progressive. But it does improve the quality of life for patients.
Vanderstraeten trains 3 days a week and says because of her time in the ring, it's easier for her to do housework and continue working as a furniture designer and painter. And she has some advice for anyone in need of motivation to get moving.
My doctor said one day it is forbidden to you to sit down. Go on. And that's my counsel to everybody. Just go on, find a sport that you like, close your ears, because everybody says, oh, you should sit down, oh, you are tired, oh, you should eat pastry. Go out to sport and do something that you like.
Words to live by from boxer Nancy Vanderstraeten. Back over to you, Sonny. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the March 5th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young. And that's the sunny side of sports.